Blog Talk Radio.
What difference if I hail from north or south, or from the east or west? My heart is filled with love for all of these. I only know I swell with pride, and deep within my breast I thrill to see, O glory faint, the breeze.
September 21st, it seems to be a lot of religious thing events in history. Savonarola was born today. He was a Roman Catholic in Italy, and he was a reformer in, I believe, Florence in Italy, and he preached against the excesses of the church. They were selling indulgences to heaven and all things, all kinds of things. There was scandals in the papacy, popes having children. So in fact, popes could be married, were married. It's interesting. Even before they were elected pope, they were usually, in those days, like the British, the elder son inherited the title and the properties. A second son went into military, and if they had a third son, he went into the priesthood. Or they could be ordained cardinal, which is number two position in the Roman Catholic Church. And the Borgias, the notorious Borgia family, a Spanish family, Alexander the Sixth, I believe, had a family, and he was fooling around, and he became one of the most controversial popes at the time in papal history. And Savonarola was criticizing the sinfulness and the hypocrisy in the church, and so they tried him, hanged him, and burned him at the stake. Also today in history, we had Martin Luther King, who was a Roman Catholic monk and our priest. I better get that correct. Anyway, today he completed his, on this day in the 15th century, he completed his translation of the Bible, and so he started Lutheranism and married a nun. Interesting. It's an interesting thing about Germans and their history and the religion. Martin Bormann, the fixer for Hitler, one of his sons became a priest, and then left the Roman Catholic priesthood. Adolf Eichmann, one of his sons, became a priest and left the church and got married. So it's a very interesting thing with these Germans. I don't know, maybe it's just something in the blood. And then in Arkansas, Drew Raines, my good friend Drew, former Marine, retired after 10 years, served as a consulate or embassy guard and served honorably, and was the grandnephew of General Butler, who said that war is a racket, and served in the Boxer Revolution in South America, and he prevented a fascist takeover of the United States during the first, I think, FDR administration or maladministration, depending on how you want to look at it. And today in Arkansas, on this day, on the 21st of September, the Baptists formed a statewide convention. I think Huckabee is a Baptist. I don't know about Bill Clinton, what he is or what he was. Religiously speaking, what is religious or lack of religious preference or practice. And then in Nazi Germany again, in the first years of the Hitler's takeover of Germany, Pastor Martin Niemöller, one of the great resistors, one of the great names, who was a Protestant, a Lutheran, he organized the Pastors' League to fight Nazism, but a lot of the people, the churches, quit because of the intimidation by the Nazis. And so later they started something else. So this is an interesting day for in organized religion. Among the birthdays today, besides Savonarola, is that of Larry Hagman. Those of you who like J.R., who Larry Hagman is also the son of the late Mary Rogers, Mary Martin. Boy, what's the matter with me today? Mary Rogers, that's somebody else we don't want to talk about. San Francisco public corruptor. But Mary Martin became famous but because of Cole Porter's show, the song My Heart Belongs to Daddy. And then later she sang in South Pacific, and she came out of Weatherford, Texas, I guess. So they build them with big voices down there, grow them with big voices that can belt it out. Great singer, great actress. And I think Larry Hagman is dead now. And then here we go back to religion and morality and public morals. Anthony Comstock, you heard of the Comstock laws, where he was this fanatic along with the woman with the hatches, Carrie Nation. Of course, she had justification for what she started, but she just carried it too far, as these so-called social reformers do. And he's the originator of the Comstock laws. The obscenity of what he saw was obscene, and forced the post office to start censoring what was going through the mails. Set up all these censor bureaus, which later became police film censoring boards. One cop usually, or the widow of a cop, as they did in Chicago, would look at films. I mean, how boring, and they would declare. Probably the most famous incidents of the Comstock laws was the banning of Baby Doll, a film, and Lolita films during the 50s, which dealt with teenage older men and with desires for young girls, let's put it that way. Not pedophilia, but, we see these things often. And then, of course, the trashy novelist Jacqueline Suzanne, Valley of the Dolls, she died of cancer today. One of the great actors, great character actors, he was in Sergeant York. Walter Brennan died today. Oh, no, it's his birthday today. And, his death. What's the matter with me? Yeah. And a famous film, it's coming back, called Task Force. It was about the naval aviation when it started. Gary Cooper, I think. Patricia Neal was in it, if I'm not mistaken. Walter Brennan played an admiral, kind of like Bill Halsey character. And I think he was in the Beverly Hillbillies, if I'm not mistaken. And then today, we should remember this, and this is something about Americans, as I've always said, do not understand espionage and intrigue and things that are necessary for national survival and national security. Nathan Hale was hanged today because of the treachery of General Benedict Arnold. On this day in 1776, Nathan Hale was captured as a spy by the British. And also Major Andre was captured by the Americans, and that's how Benedict Arnold was discovered trying to sell or turning over the plans to the British in the Revolutionary War, the plans to West Point. And Nathan Hale is remembered by every child who is taught American history and civics. I have only one life to give for my country. Well, spies, that may be good for then, applicable then. But right now, spies have got to survive and get the information back to their country. And no matter whether they're KGB, Duzima Bureau in France, MI5, CIA, every country needs this. It's an ugly business, a necessary business, and a lot of dirty things go on. But it's gone on. That's the second oldest profession, as a matter of fact. So it goes back to biblical times. First oldest profession is prostitution. We should remember Nathan Hale, but realize that we can't go around killing, having all our people killed off, or we won't have a spy service. And then, let's see. Oh, yes. Now, this is the first time in history on this day in 1451, and it's ironic because what happened in Holland, a Roman Catholic cardinal was involved. He ordered Jews to wear badges identifying themselves as Jews, and I guess that's where the Nazis got the idea of the yellow star and Juden put on it. And then this is, we should think of people like, he's running for Congress, Colonel Allen West, in Florida, distinguished American black, served his country honorably, and now he wants to serve the country in Congress as a congressman. A lot of people I've talked to, and he's got a great website out there, I understand, and if you've got funds, a little extra money, send him a donation so he can win that election, and we'll get some decent people who respect the military and who'll be in Congress, who've served honorably and who know what they're talking about and are not going to be susceptible to all of this this crotch politics, this don't ask, don't tell fuss that they're raising because the gays want to have access to American military personnel. It should be remembered that the political godfather of this whole modern political movement to have open gay lesbianism, although I don't know about the lesbianism in Nazi Germany, but it was Colonel Captain Ernest Rohm, R-O-E-H-M, who served honorably in World War I in the trenches and for Imperial Germany, and he was buddy-buddy with Adolf. And he was the one that, with his street boys, brought Hitler to power, the S.A. I can't pronounce the long German name, always unpronounceable. But anyway, he built an army of predominantly homosexuals. I don't know about lesbianism, although that issue is now coming up. Over 300,000 young men were in it, and there were orgies, there was extortion, pedophilia, and the German general staff and the industrialists and other powerful figures, and Himmler, because he was a rival, decided that Rome had to go. And he was, his group was wiped out essentially in the night of, in June, I think in 1934. That's called the Night of the Long Knives, and Himmler carried out these executions. Rome was brought back to Munich and put in the cell and left with a pistol, and the message was, you know, blow your brains out. And he wouldn't do it. When the two SS guys came back, he said, have Adolf come and do it. And instead they picked up the gun and blew him away. But he is the modern political godfather of open homosexuality in the media, although it goes back, as I've said on other occasions. Julius Caesar was a wife to his men and a husband to his wife. Alexander the Great was predominantly gay. There were other generals. We had Baron von Steuben, who served honorably, brought a young aide with him. He was cashiered out of the Prussian army because of a homosexual scandal. And we've had other admirals and other generals and others in the ranks who have served honorably but didn't politicize their sexual preference. So it's not something that's unique. It's just something that historically has been there. It has been in all the modern spy episodes we've had for 100 years, starting with Colonel Radel, who was head of Austrian military security. Spy service was involved with young cadets and was selling Austria's military secrets to the Russians before World War I, and he was caught. And he blew his brains out. We've had the case of Esterhazy, who was a Hungarian who somehow got into the French army, went through Saint-Cyr, which is their West Point, and was selling military secrets to the Germans after the Franco-Prussian War, and set up Alfred Dreyfus, a fellow soldier, as the culprit. And the guy, the German who was receiving the military, French military secrets, was Schwarzkoppen, who was a homosexual. And this is briefly described in the latest film on the Dreyfus case. And there are more films on that episode in French military history than any other spy episode in any country's history. And then we had the Rosenbergs, and who stole the atomic bomb, but the people involved in that were the British foreign office people. One was a diplomat here who was caught in flagrante with a black young man in Virginia having sex in a car, and he was sent back to Britain. They were communists who helped steal the secrets of the atomic bomb. Philby was the ringleader, who was also a diplomat. I don't know what it is about the British in this. And then there was Captain Vassal, the British, the Royal Navy, was selling military secrets, homosexuals selling military secrets to the Russians. And we've had other cases, notorious case in World War II, a German diplomat was having an affair with a Polish Jewish boy, Gretzel, I think. And he got spurned, and the kid blew him away. And so Hitler used that as an excuse for the night of Kristallnacht to come down on the Jews and get rid of them for good. There was a trashing of Jewish businesses in Germany, as known as the Kristallnacht, the night of the crystal. And let's see, what else today? We want to get into, this is also an important event. 50 years ago, Nikita Khrushchev was the premier of Russia, and he was in World War II. He was a political commissar. He did survive the Stalin's purges. We'll get into Stalin a little later in honest elections. And he became premier of Russia after Stalin's death in 1953, I think. Also on that day, Sergei Prokofiev, one of the greatest Russian composers and pianists, he also died, but he didn't get the ink, as they say, on that day. But anyway, there was a coup. Beria, the head of the NKVD, which was what it was called in those days, later came to KGB, maneuvered to try to succeed Stalin and be a dictator and continue the brutality and the terror. Instead, Khrushchev and Bulganin and Malenkov and Molotov all ganged up against him, and they had him arrested, and I guess he was terminated with extreme displeasure, as we say. And Bulganin, it was known as B&K. Bulganin and Khrushchev became the leaders, and then Bulganin was forced out, and Khrushchev became numero first among equals. And he made a visit to the United States in September of 1959. And there was a lot of problems because we've had what are called DPs, people who left Europe after World War II. They couldn't go back to their home countries. Some escaped the Stalinist terror. And there were protests against his visit. He was in Iowa to study to look at agriculture. And he went to Hollywood, and this is where the big one blew up, and made some unfortunate comments, got into a fight, a verbal pissing match between the mayor, whose name was Paulson at the time, and he was very angry, and he was going to cancel his trip. And Eisenhower knew, was trying to encourage detente between the Soviet Union and the United States. And so he called on his friend, Mayor George Christopher of San Francisco. George Christopher is one of the most remarkable men and probably the greatest modern mayor in the history of the state of California. He emigrated here as an infant from Greece, legal immigration, legal. And then he worked his way, went to accounting school at night at Golden Gate, what was known as Golden Gate, was a YMCA college at the time, started a business, Christopher Dairies, built it into the biggest dairy in California, made donations, was a stalwart in civic affairs, politics, served on our city council, and then ran for mayor. And he knew all these diplomats, he knew all these foreign leaders around the world. And so he gave me a tape before he died. I've known him for 10, I knew him for 10 years, great friend and source of information. And we put it up on YouTube. It's not quite finished because I had to edit it. Anyway, we're going to play an excerpt from how he salvaged that diplomatic brouhaha where Khrushchev's wife was insulted. That's what really got Khrushchev angry, and he was going to go home in a huff. Later, 6 months later, we had the U-2 Francis Gary Powers incident, where we thought that this there was spying. There was going to be a meeting with Khrushchev and Eisenhower in Vienna, a summit, and unfortunately, there was no communication between the White House and our military intelligence people. That's why it's important that we have competent people in the spy services. And they sent this plane over Russia. It flew up about 60,000 feet, and was thought that the Russians didn't have missiles to bring any of our planes down that could fly that high. We got fooled. Francis Gary Powers was shot down. Eisenhower didn't know about it until it happened. He didn't even know about the flight, and it was unfortunate because it happened before the proposed meeting, the scheduled meeting in Vienna. And so, of course, they immediately disavowed that there was no spying and blah, 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 you know. And, of course, the Russians said, well, we got the plane, we got the pilot, and here's the wreckage. And they put it all over the news wires of the world. And that had a San Francisco connection, which we'll get into in another day. But here is George Christopher talking about how he salvaged that diplomatic brouhaha. Here we go. San Francisco's greatest modern mayor.
I focus my attention to
this is just a little introduction here.
Bringing up the revenues in the place that could alleviate the burden in the outlying area too.
On the small homeowner.
Well, on the small homeowners, because if we didn't have
this was
the redevelopment
interview.
Of Japantown, for instance,
couldn't edit
which
it out.
I did, and the redevelopment of the other areas at Golden Gateway, and also the garages that I built, which sustained the business element downtown. Otherwise, we'd have lost two or three of our major store operators. For instance, let's say, just contemplate for a minute what a disaster would be. Let's say if Macy's closed tomorrow. The destruction of that area itself would be reflected in every single home in San Francisco.
Like Cleveland was in the 70s.
Well, so you have to have a combination where the mayor has the goodwill and the confidence of the business community, the investing community. If those two elements don't work together, the city can be in trouble. I recall when I wanted to build the 5th and Mission Garage, for instance. And I had, even then I had dissidents, even for that. And a group came in, they said, no, we're against it. There's a few houses down there, a few this and that. And we're against it. And one fellow got up and he said, the only reason you're doing this is because you want to help the Emporium I Magnin and the city of Paris, and I was supposed to get up and deny that, you know. They thought I'd get up and deny it vehemently and say, no, that isn't what I'm doing it for. But I got up and I said, I want to say that you're absolutely right. That's just why I'm doing it, because I want to keep the Emporium and these other department stores active and prosperous, making money and paying taxes. And if we don't do this, we're going to lose them. Well, they were shocked that I agreed with them.
Now, that's helping the above structure. One of the major problems facing this city is deferred maintenance. And then, despite the fact that, you know, as you well know, the bonds seem to, we float them and we never know where they end up. Can you comment on that?
Well, deferred maintenance, I wish Harry Ross was still alive. He could tell you. Because when I went in, it's been a habit of mayors over the years, especially around election time.
Remember there.
You folks who are in the public realm, I say this to the newspapers and to the radio broadcasters and anybody who's involved, you have to be careful about the bond issues, because if the mayor does not pay attention to the deferred maintenance, then eventually what they do is the assets fall apart, and then they ask for a bond issue. Well, Harry Ross and I had an agreement I would put in $18 million a year excess in the budget just for the deferred maintenance that had been eliminated in prior years, but still, in the meantime, keep up what's necessary for the present. But to catch up, and in 8 years, say I put in $160 million practically for deferred maintenance. And deferred maintenance is one of the best opportunities to avoid bond issues. Another thing, too, I never did at that time, was to take money out of the water department, Hetch Hetchy, and put it in the general fund. Today, they'll take $40, $50 million of the profits of the Hetch Hetchy project in the general fund. In the meantime, the general fund is accelerating. Well, here's what's going to happen someday. Someday they're going to come with a bond for a bond issue and say, Hetch Hetchy water supply needs $100 or $200 million.
We're getting there.
And we're getting there, yes. You see, this deferred maintenance is something that nobody sees. Nobody understands what it is. It's a hidden enemy. And if you don't keep up with it, you're going to be in trouble.
Well, I'm going to keep talking about it. One of my favorite subjects, as you know, the poor sailor who's in jail and is 3 years, no fresh air or sunlight. The kid, Steve Neri, the young sailor who's been accused of killing a politician, was connected to Hallinan. We brought it up before. But when you built that jail, it was a state-of-the-art jail at the time. I remember you mentioning that you had consulted with the best prison experts, the FBI.
You mean the new...
Yeah, 850, Brian, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But at that time, you didn't expect people to stay there 2-3 years like they're doing right now, did you?
No. That was a kind of a temporary thing before they went to the higher element.
The big Q. Okay. What is the problem with San Bruno? That's always in the federal courts.
I don't know. You know, you're asking me questions that I'm not aware of. San Bruno, someday somebody will come along and say, we need another bond issue to
Right, yeah. Well, we've had bond issues, and it never seems to get physically rehabilitated.
Another thing, too, that will come up sometime in the next, I would say, 3 or 4 years, will be Laguna Honda Home. Mm-hmm. And this will be a disaster because the more it deteriorates, the more you need to rehabilitate it. And Laguna Honda Home is a very vital necessity.
What would you say, of course, we didn't get to this one, our previous conversations, but the Muni. I've been to cities, as you have, all around the world, and this is one of the best laid out transportation systems, but one of the worst managed. What would you recommend that they do to get it running efficiently?
You see, the Muni today has more problems, and I hate to say this, but quite a bit of it is due to personnel. And the unions, and I have nothing against the unions because I worked with them. I never, in my private business, I was there 45 years, never had any trouble. I paid the top wages. I always had a very amicable relationship. But if you give somebody just a little leeway and you're a little negligent, then these problems multiply. And, for instance, this fellow Cruz that was running the Muni for several years, he's a fine man. I know him quite well. He's a gentleman. He's a fine man in every way. But if I were the mayor at the time when Willie Bond got in, I don't think I would have appointed him as general manager of the Muni. I would have searched around and found out who was available with transportation experience. And, you just can't pick somebody off the street just because you're a secretary, make a general manager out of them, and jump them for $50,000 a year up to $160,000.
I think he has an engineering degree.
What?
I think he has an engineering degree from Stanford.
Yeah, there are a lot of engineers, but they don't know how to run it.
Right.
Yeah, that's hardly, you need a a streetcar operator. That's what you need.
Yeah.
Now we've got another situation where this Booz Allen is going to come in. They're engineers too, but they've been getting some millions of dollars in the past for their opinions. Well, the opinions don't seem to work.
But they keep getting the millions.
But they keep getting the millions, yes.
One of the other problems I see in a city, and it's close to Rich Disco's in my heart, is the voter fraud. I see more and more voter fraud. I see more and more of it. I have access to the entire state's database through political consultants that I know, and I've seen things. I've even talked to some people who voted fraudulently. It seems that this city is becoming more and more balkanized. You know what I mean, especially coming from Greece, you know, from that part. What can we do to bring this city together?
Well, that's a broad question. It calls for a broad answer.
You're a politician.
Yeah. But, you know, getting back to what I said at the outset here, there's... Now, my memory goes back to the time when Angelo Rossi was defeated, and downtown at that time wanted to get somebody to take over the mayor's office. Nobody would run. Finally, what did they do? They got hold of Roger Lapham, an eminent businessman, no expert. The story to him was, look, we know you do not know how to run the city. We know that. We know that you're not a fiscal expert from the standpoint of running San Francisco. We want you to get in there and be a caretaker until something develops. Roger Lapham went in there. He had the clock running. Day by day was one day less. And he was just a caretaker. He didn't... But he bought the Muni. He was able to arrange that. If nothing else, that was sufficient. But the climate today really is not the same as it was in those days. It was not, because that's one of the things I always held against George Riley when I ran against him. He had been appointed to the Board of Supervisors by Angelo Rossi. And yet he ran against Angelo Rossi for mayor.
That's gratitude.
And one day he and I were talking, and he says, you don't seem to have much confidence in me. I said, well, no, George. I said, you've been on the Board of Equalization for a long time, and that's not my style. I said, but... The only thing I would resent about you is that you ran against the man who appointed you to the Board of Supervisors. And I says, I don't like ingrates. That's complete ingratitude. Yeah.
The bileless weed.
Yeah.
Can we get to the lighter subject, back to Mrs. Khrushchev? Do you remember the episode when they came here and she wouldn't get off the train? Just a little anecdotal thing?
Well, she was a sensitive lady. She was a fine lady, too. She wasn't the tough person that... Nikita was, and he was quite a character, I must say. I enjoyed being with him for 2 weeks in the Kremlin, because...
That's when you did missions for Eisenhower?
What?
When you did diplomatic missions for Eisenhower?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I had been... I did quite a few like that, but... anyway, his wife had been insulted by a writer for one of the newspapers, I think the New York Times, said that she didn't perform like a first lady of the USSR, but she wore black drab stockings, and her dress was too plain and not sufficiently glamorous. You know. So the poor lady didn't know what to make of it. So that morning when they were coming up from Los Angeles, they came up by train, as you know. And I had built a special platform out by the SB Depot to receive them. And Henry Cabot Lodge, who was escorting Khrushchev around the country at that time, said, now, he says, Mayor, you better be careful because Khrushchev is going to find some excuse and leave and go back and then blast the United States for being inhospitable. So I was quite frank with Henry Cabot Lodge, who was a fine gentleman. I said, well, look, Ambassador, I call him Ambassador, because at that time he was Ambassador to the United Nations. I said, if he leaves, why doesn't he leave from Los Angeles? I don't want to leave from San Francisco. You know, he said, we're on our way. He phoned me right from the train. We'll be there about 11 o'clock, he said. 10:30, 11 o'clock. Fine. So I called my florist immediately. I got him out of bed. I said, why don't you go down to the store and get four dozen beautiful red roses and have them ready for me. So in the meantime, I had called all the police back. No policeman had a day off. Some in plain clothes, most of them in uniform. And so here I am waiting now with my wife, and she had the roses. And Henry Cabot Lodge said, if you'll do all the, let me do all the talking, he said, because every place, all these mayors, wherever we go, they always say something and we get into trouble. And I said, well, no. I said, Ambassador, I don't think I want to do that. He says, well, why not? I said, well, to be frank with you, I said, so far you're not doing too well. So I said, what you better do is let me do the talking in my own stupid way. I said, and then if he leaves, it's my fault, because if he leaves and it's your fault, I'll still have to take the blame. But I can't say it's not my fault. It's Henry Cabot Lodge's fault. Well, he says, you got a point there. So Khrushchev came out of the train with Henry Cabot Lodge. I greeted him. Well, I tried to greet him, but I put my hand out just this far to see if he would reach for it, but he didn't do it. Yeah, he didn't do it. He was still mad, seething mad. Oh, my God, he was absolutely mad. But Mrs. Khrushchev didn't come out. She was still in the train. So I kind of killed a little time, try to be a little, with a little levity, a little casualness, but I wasn't getting very far. So finally I decided I'd have to take a high risk, because if he was going to leave, I might as well get it over with. So I said to him, Mr. Chairman, I said, he'd like to be called Mr. Chairman, I determined that. I said, can you tell me, please, where the big boss is? Oh, my God. Poor Henry Cabot Lodge almost went through the floor. He almost dropped dead. That was the end of it, you know. So Khrushchev himself got a little excited. He said, what do you mean? I said, just between you and me, I said, I want you to know that everybody in San Francisco thinks I'm the big boss. He says, I'm not. I said, you know who the big boss is? He said, who? I said, see that lady over there with the big bunch of red roses? She's the big boss. I said, everybody in the Soviet Union thinks you're the big boss, but the big boss really is still in the train, and we're not going to leave here until she comes out. Well, by golly, that broke the ice, you know. He looked at me. All of a sudden, he had a big grin. He put his hand out. We shook hands. He says, you're all right. He says, you're different. Yeah. And poor Henry Cabot Lodge was appeased. You know, he was. So she came out. Then he went in and got her, brought her out. I had an extra car for her and my wife and brought her. But the one thing that really helped because he, I was the only mayor that he invited to be his guest in the in Russia, and but you know how they work it. They don't ask. They don't issue the invitation and say. First, they ask you through some ambassador, if you are invited, would you accept? You see, they can't afford to have a rejection. You see, and then you have, if you say yes, well then they issue the invitation. Well, they asked me the question. I said certainly I'd accept. I said, as a result, all the San Francisco press came along with me. They paid their way, but the, but the papers paid their way. So they asked me, and I went. But the thing that really made me, put me in a better position was when we were at the Mark Hopkins Hotel. That's where we had a special suite for them up there. And that morning,
well, that interview was longer than I thought. It was a different one. It's much longer. Anyway, we'll play the entire interview. That was done before George Christopher's death, and it was TV show done. It's still in the can. We haven't decided what we're going to do with it. Our greatest mayor in the state of California. Amazing man and my friend. So some of the other things that are going on now. I'm just going to say that in a privacy issue, the 24-hour fitness, both employees and patrons of the gym of that chain are concerned about the safety of if they give their finger as a source of identification for a data bank, considering technology that is expected in the next 10 years. You'll be able to use a finger to enter your house, your car, or whatever, your bank accounts or safety deposit box. So people are very aware of technology and how it can be easily cracked. So they're not, they're still using the cards and will not give them the finger, whether in swearing or but for safety reasons. Also, a major chain, I'll print a copy of the letter, part of it, is considering offering free laptop and internet service to their customers or to attract customers. So we'll have that. And then we'll get the rest of that interview and plus our YouTube site. Go to our YouTube site. We're updating stuff as quickly as possible. We've got over 1,500 interviews plus all the video verite. It's Amicus Veritas, AmicusVeritas at YouTube. And let's see, what else do we have here? Then we'll be back on Friday, and we're going to be trying to, we're always experimenting with this. And also we'll do more on Joseph Stalin's advice on honest elections. we'll get into that and how the Stalinists over here have used his practices and learn from him on how to rig elections. And we are very concerned about what's going to happen. And I'm told, discussing this with Jerrains and other people, that we fear there will be vote fraud, and they already probably started it. And we've seen it happen with Acorn and the Alinskyites and the crotch politicians and do vote fraud. We documented, unlike other publications, we have actually had access and do have copies of the actual phony voter registrations and the places where they pull it and the people who did it. So let's end it now, and we'll be back Friday, and we'll there'll be other things, and we'll have the total part of this interview. So here we go.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
You guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too.
Hit me with a
gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear.
We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Yes, we do, people. So let's make sure we get the right one. This is Peter Paul Brazola. Thank you for tuning in, and this will be up on the archives. Good night.